we're not having communion today, obviously, but this is going to be a sermon about communion, kind of. It's a sermon about how, in lots of ways, every time we eat together or drink together is communion. And we're a church, so we eat together a lot. Well, maybe we'll eat watermelon today. Like anyone who's grown up in the church, which I think is many of us, I can remember lots and lots of church basement potlucks. At least in my church, they were in the basement. And there was always coffee in a big urn, which I didn't drink, but I did steal the sugar cubes, and orange Tang in plastic pitchers, which we called church juice, which I did drink a lot of. And there were often tiny tuna and egg salad sandwiches and jello salad and deviled eggs. I'm sure all of this sounds very familiar. And if it was a celebration, a sheet cake. Like, that was living. And there was always, of course, the rush of kids to get to the front. And we still understand what that is like. It's still happening because we want the kids to eat first, of course. But, of course, there's a rush because if you wait, the good stuff might be gone. Like that sheet cake, you might not get the corner piece with the flowers on it if you hold back. Well, the church at Corinth probably didn't have a church basement. It was that these recollections of childhood potlucks that came to mind as I sat with this text, mainly because of the way Paul is addressing the members of the Corinthian church, who are full-grown adults. But that is not the tone that Paul takes with them. I often enjoy Paul because he's very pastoral. This is not a time when he is pastoral. He says, "Don't you have houses to drink in and eat in? Or do you look down on God's churches and humiliate those that have nothing? What can I say to you? Will I praise you? No, I do not praise you in this." And what I hear in my head is, "You kids! I expect better behavior from you." I mean, this is very, like, finger wagging. Like, didn't I teach you manners? What house did you grow up in? Like, this is the voice that I get from Paul. And when I love him the most, Paul is pastoral, but I kind of like this too, because he did not have children of his own, but he is bringing some serious dad vibes to this potluck. Some serious, like, "You behave yourselves." Like, I can just hear it. When I think of the shared meal of the Corinthian church, I remember not just the potlucks of my childhood, but the many, many times I have eaten with people in churches, in basements, and in parks, and in homes, with church members, in this very room, even, only weeks ago. And just like us, the church in Corinth ate together. And in fact, they ate every time they gathered together. There are still many churches who do that. Church and food go together, which is not our experience, but once a month is pretty good. And we always, I mean, lots of times we have snacks. So there's always a bit of, you know, and never not coffee, right? There's always a practice of partaking together. And in the Corinthian church, there sort of was a kind of a potluck meal there too. And it was certainly the case that everyone who could bring something to share should, because the church had received instructions, or, you know, like, they had that practice from the very first gathering in Acts of sharing what they had together with each other. But just like the city of Corinth itself, Corinth was a big port city and lots of trade and, like, you know, it's like just a really dynamic happening city. And Corinth had a wide array of economic situations. So there were the very, very wealthy and the very, very poor. And they were sitting together at one table. And often the wealthy were the hosts because they had the space for the gatherings. And they had leisure time with fewer demands. And so the elites of the city, or the elites of the Corinthian church, they would get together beforehand and they would maybe have some appetizers and maybe a drink or two or more. And they would get the party started, so to speak. And they would eat the best of the food and the wine, even becoming drunk, so that when the others arrived, when the poor arrived, some of whom had much less to share, maybe nothing to share, there was very little left. Maybe they were slaves, even, or laborers who had obligations and certainly much less flexibility to be able to just be gathered together anytime. So you can see how this would be distressing to them in particular, and to Paul, who sees where there is conflict beginning to happen within the church. And Paul's position is very firmly on the side of the poor in this congregation. And his parental tone, his distress, is directed at the wealthy, at the privileged in Corinth. And I can imagine that is not a tone they would have heard directed at them very often. If you are not used, if you are in a wealthy position, you are used to people saying yes to you and letting you have what you want all the time. I'm sure many of us can imagine a person or two who is like that in our culture. So Paul goes on to remind them, "For I received from the Lord what I have handed on to you." And he relates to them. He reminds them of the words that Jesus said and the instructions that Jesus gave, that when that this bread is my body, this cup is my blood poured out. And whenever you eat or drink, whenever you eat or drink, remember Jesus. And so, my wealthy Corinthian friends, how are you remembering Jesus when you are getting drunk? When you are eating up all the best food? When you are gorging yourselves and leaving others nothing? How, my friends, is that remembering Christ? There are lots and lots of ways to interpret communion, and all of them are important. Remembering it as a narrative and recalling that recalls all the ways that Jesus fed and ate with people throughout his ministry and provided food for people. Remembering it as a symbolic meal that points to new life and new covenant through Christ. An interpretation that makes it an invitation, so that this is a table that's there for all to be gathered to. Or a foretaste of God's kingdom to come, a foretaste of the rich feast where everyone will have enough. But at a very, very basic level, communion is food. It's food that could meet a real need of hunger in people. And especially when I serve children, that's the most real, is because children just want that grape juice. And they just want that bread because it's good and because they're hungry. And that is a beautiful reason to share communion. And the divide in Corinth was very real, because some people's hunger was not being fed. And there are consequences to communion. There are economic consequences and there are community consequences. Communion, as it's intended to be practiced every time, I really appreciate, Catherine, that you emphasize that when you read the scripture. Every time you eat and drink together, it's not an economic or community structure that anyone in Corinth was used to. It was really unusual for those people to be gathered together in one place in the church. It is one of the most beautiful things about church. But in Corinth, they lived in an economy where money buys status, where wealth and hierarchy are very intertwined, where you literally can own another person and you can spend yourself into debt to buy status. Nowadays, Juneteenth may have done away with slavery 150 years ago, but we're still feeling the consequences of that structure, of that enslavement, the divisions between race and class. And it's been 2,000 years since the church in Corinth gathered for its community potlucks, but we still feel the rift between the wealthy and the poor. In Seattle, maybe now more than ever. I just heard recently, maybe some of you heard these statistics too, that 1 in 14 people in Seattle is a millionaire, like has a $1 million liquid in cash. And 1/3 of Seattleites live below the poverty line. That's astonishing statistics to hold together. Astonishing. So it still exists, these rifts between the poor and the wealthy. Now more than ever. The clergy group that I'm a part of in Kirkland, that I've really been appreciating being a part of other clergy people and churches who are also really interested in looking at those kinds of dynamics in society and thinking about where the church, how the church responds. It's the same group that is bringing us together to walk in the Oh, I forgot to bring the signs down. I have some signs I want to show you all. I'll bring them down afterward. We're going to carry signs that offer an alternative theology to what the evangelical right is saying what Christians are called to in this nation. Anyway, one of the things that we're planning for fall is we're going to host a potluck, this clergy group, and it's through an organization called Paths to Understanding that I think is rooted in the Lutheran Church, or at least its CEO, or not CEO, it's C, whatever the nonprofit version of that is. Its executive director is a Lutheran priest. They're promoting this idea of called Potlucks for Democracy, which is like gathering people in communities just to eat together and talk to each other across faith, across religion, so that we can just like get to know who our neighbors are and understand each other. Learn, be less isolated from each other. So this project is called Potlucks for Democracy. And the Kirkland clergy are going to be hosting one in September, along with the rescheduled God and Country Democracy. So a potluck and movie viewing at Holy Spirit Lutheran Church, just up the road. Now listen, I do not think that democracy is a theological value. It's not good theologically, and nor do I necessarily think it is a moral good, but I am absolutely behind potlucks because I think communion has consequences, and as followers of Jesus Christ, we are called every time we eat and drink to remember what we are called to through Christ, which is to build community, to build connection, and to build human relationship. In his letter to the Corinthians, Paul is reminding the church that when they eat and drink together, they remember that the meal, that their entire life together, in fact, should reflect God's reign. And God's reign is not a democracy, by the way. In spite of ethnic differences, in spite of religious origins, in spite of gender differences or age or status, when they eat together, they are one family, and Jesus Christ is the head of that family. So when it comes to sharing food, when it comes to sharing life, how do we take what Jesus has handed to us and live that? When we have a potluck here, we have no problem letting the kids go first. We make sure that, someone runs out and gets Subway if somebody else doesn't have something to eat. We make sure there's a really delicious gluten-free cake that we can all eat together. So we work at making sure everyone belongs at the table. I will say, though, I do monitor how many brownies my child takes versus like how many carrots or strawberries or whatever. But that's so that everybody can have enough. And our challenge, I think, is these days to reach out beyond ourselves, to share our tables and our resources with people we haven't shared our table with before. Those are some of the reasons that I feel called to be in the Kirkland Parade, to sit at a pride table and meet the neighbors of this congregation, to be with those whose place on the political or social spectrum might be different from our own, to meet and sit at a table with those who might share different religious views or different places on the economic ladder. It's possible and maybe even likely that the only people who will show up at that potluck for democracy are other white progressive middle-class Christians like myself, because after all, it's hosted by clergy members, all of whom are white middle-class you know, educated, et cetera, et cetera. But even in that practice of gathering with others in community, of sitting at a table and talking about what we value, the values of justice and inclusion, and being at tables together, that is something that I do value. And I hope to personally seek more opportunities to be in my community, to sit at tables with people, and by doing so, to inhabit this reign of God together. May it be so. Mm-hmm.